Something wicked is coming this way, and only fools are ignoring the signs. So it's time you became a financial prepper like thousands of others. Gold can travel anywhere. It's international. It's its own currency. Allocate to gold now, the timeless safe haven asset. Open an IRA with Noble Gold Investments to physically hold coins and bars, and let real, tangible gold, not just paper, save your portfolio as the economy burns again. Right now, Noble Gold Investments offers a free 3-ounce silver American Virtue coin with every qualified IRA. Just use the promo code GOLD to claim your free coin and secure your family's financial future. Go to NobleGoldInvestments.com now. NobleGoldInvestments.com.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
Lawyer, are you there? Can you hear me, sir?
I'm here. I can hear you.
Okay, excellent. We've got you on screen now for the audience. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. I really appreciate it.
Sure. Happy to be here.
Excellent. So your case has the Patriot world in a tailspin. People are very excited about it. I try not to be too hyperbolic when I said on the thumbnail that this has the potential to change everything, has certainly a potential to change a lot. Now, I would like to talk before we get into the specifics of the case. I guess I want to know a little bit more about you in particular, because you and your brothers have put together a number of cases, but this is the one that made it to the Supreme Court. Where did this all begin for you?
Okay, this began when Barack Obama told the world that the Constitution was fundamentally flawed, mm-hmm. and that motivated me to read the Constitution. And, you know, when you hear it and you know that he's just defaming the Constitution, you feel one way. But when you open the Constitution up and you go to Article 2, Section 1, last paragraph, and you see the oath that he swore, and he swore to uphold and defend the Constitution of the United States, you see that he's violating his oath on national television.
Yes.
So that motivated me to get going and study the Constitution. So I was doing that for the last several years. My brother Darren was motivated to sue banks because of the damage that he felt like the banks were causing everyone with the subprime mortgage bundling in the stock market, right? Mm-hmm. So he got involved in that. And my other brother, I have two other brothers. Gaynor is the one that runs the studio and video and is playing his trumpet better than he ever has, telling us we need to get busy and practice. And then Roland is just a genius programmer and strategist and comedian. But not professionally.
Well, you got to have a sense of humor when it comes to this stuff, because otherwise it'd drive you mad.
Really, yeah. Yeah, you really do. You have to just smile and just take what comes and do the best you can to, you know, handle the opportunities when they arise.
All right. So why do you believe that it's your case in particular that has made it as far as it has?
Well, first of all, it's not about the election. It's not about voter fraud. It's a totally different kind of a case. It's about a national security breach. And the Supreme Court even characterized it as such, because if you've been watching any of the videos, we were stuck in the Tenth Circuit Court. We actually launched two federal cases. Mm-hmm. My case, I started first as the plaintiff, and then Roland, we got his going as well. Mine got stuck in federal court, so I took the federal court to the Tenth Circuit Court of Appeals with a petition for writ of mandamus, and they didn't help us. So we took both courts to the state court, and after we went through the rounds there, they unblocked my case, filed it for me. And then they actually issued 388 summonses. Our premise was that we have a constitutional protected right, and they have an oath to protect that right for petition for redress of grievances and for due process. So that's still alive. That case is still alive. And my brother's case is now at the Supreme Court. It got stuck in the Tenth Circuit. He wanted to start in state court, you know, but that's fine. So we started in state court. The U.S. attorneys moved it to federal court, which was fine. And we knew that they were going to file motions to dismiss and probably prevail. And that was fine because our goal, we didn't start this, you know, thinking, oh, they're going to toss it, we're going to quit. No, we started this knowing that they would probably dismiss it. And then we would take it to the Supreme Court after we satisfied, get the decisions from the lower courts, which is only two, federal court and the Tenth Circuit. Mm-hmm. So the Tenth Circuit Court of Appeals, we're waiting for them to make a decision, go ahead and uphold the dismissal so we can move it to the Supreme Court. And they sit on it for 4 months. And so we got pretty frustrated with that. And we found a way to bypass having to wait for them. And so it was Rule 11 of the U.S. Supreme Court. So we filed a special petition under Rule 11, which means if they accept it, they're accepting it without getting a final decision from the 10th Circuit, which means if they accept it, if they docket it, then they are categorizing it. They're qualifying it as a national emergency. So we got that off to them. And 5 days after we mailed it overnight, we received a phone call. My brother received a phone call from the Supreme Court. And he was pretty excited to see on the caller ID, United States Supreme Court. It's not every day you get a call from the Supreme Court, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the clerk's office was calling him. Now, the clerk of the Supreme Court is not a justice clerk. The clerk of the Supreme Court is Scott Sessions. I believe his name is Scott Sessions Harris. And for 11 years, he was the attorney for the United States Supreme Court. And a case analyst from his office had been instructed to call us, telling us that our case had been accepted without a decision from the 10th Circuit, therefore accepting it as a national emergency by allowing us to do it under Rule 11. And so they asked us if we would include some more information in it, that they had some documents that they had reviewed from the docket, from the federal court docket. They asked us to include the motion to dismiss, and we also included the opposition of the motion to dismiss. And then as we were getting prepared, they like it perfect bound. So we have to go to printers, format it, print it, and then take it to the binders and print it. So just as we were about to get it to them, the 10th Circuit Court of Appeal makes a decision. And so we call the clerk up and tell the clerk or the clerk's office, the analyst, what had happened. And if we could just get it to them anyway, because it's a lot of work to reformat it and take that out. And she says, no, you don't need it. Take it out. And then she even kind of put a little pressure on us to get it quickly the first time. And this time she was a little more aggressive. And she says, now, how soon are we going to get this? And he said, well, it's going to take about 2 weeks. And she says, we'd like to get it sooner than that. Can you get it sooner than 2 weeks? And my brother says, well, let's see what we can do. And so we were pretty excited that they were anxious to get it. So we hustled and we got the printers and the binders working fast, and we got it finished a week early. So we sent it on the 20th. They got it on the 24th. It was docketed on the day they received it and showed that it was filed the day we sent it. So on the stamps that you see, if you go to supremecourt.gov or if you go to 7discoveries.com, you can see a picture of the cover, and it shows that it was filed a few days before they received it, which I guess they just follow. You know, I guess normal procedure is just to go, you know, the day that you mailed it, you know. So now that's docketed, and now they notice the U.S. attorneys, they let the attorneys know that they have one chance to fight this, one legal chance, and that's to file an opposition, and they have about 30 days to do it. So November 23rd rolls around. Oh, another thing, too, is they instructed my brother to go ahead and send a form to waive their right to file an opposition. And so he sent that to them and followed up with a phone call asking them if they would do that. It would speed things up so that we could get it docketed for conference. And he didn't get a reply back, and they didn't do anything about that. So 23rd of November rolls around, which is the deadline for them to file an opposition. And about 1 o'clock in the afternoon, it's like hours before the deadline is up. When the deadline is up, they lose their opportunity to file an opposition and also lose their opportunity to ask for an extension. Mm-hmm. So we look at the docket, checking it constantly. About 1 o'clock in the afternoon on Wednesday, the 23rd, we see that the U.S. attorneys are no longer representing the 388 defendants. But the U.S. Solicitor General has taken over as their defense attorney, and she's also filed a signed waiver, waiving their right to oppose it and waiving their right to extend time so that they could file an opposition. So we were pretty excited about that. So within a few days after that, the docket reflects a conference date of January 6th, 2023. So that's pretty much it in a nutshell. There's a lot of backstory, interesting stories, you know, leading up to that. But that's basically where we're at now.
Well, how ironic that the conference date is set for January 6th. Pretty interesting. So, I mean, Loy, I mean, I don't have a lot of experience filing cases with the Supreme Court, but I mean, it almost seems like they want to get it before the bench. Like they're excited to go ahead and talk about this and the implications of it.
Well, it makes sense because they characterized it as an emergency, a national emergency. They agreed to do it that way. And wouldn't it make sense that they would want it as soon as possible? Mm-hmm. It wouldn't make sense for them to let us file it as a national emergency petition and then say, just take your time. That wouldn't make sense. And so I was on an interview yesterday with a lawyer, and he looked up when the last time a Rule 11 was allowed into the Supreme Court and docketed. And it was in the 70s during the Nixon administration, and it was the U.S. government that did it. So this is an extremely rare situation. There's probably not an attorney alive that's represented a private individual or pro se allowed to file a Rule 11 emergency petition. So there's several elements to this that kind of make it stand out different from other petitions. And also they notified the district court that they had docketed it. The district court sent an email to my brother and he forwarded it to me. And they assigned a case number. It actually said case number 22-4007. So if you go to supremecourt.gov and do a docket search, don't do the first search. Go down. The first search, you won't get anywhere. But go down to the second search bar down below, and you can type in 22-380 or 22-4007, and it will take you to the exact same petition of writ of certiorari.
So this is the other thing. You guys filed this pro se. I mean, you haven't used a lawyer to put this together. Do you guys have any legal experience, or this is just what you've come to learn this over the years?
Well, if we had hired a lawyer, they wouldn't have let us file it in federal or state court. They would have had told us that we had to get permission from the sergeant in arms, we'd have to get a waiver, and we'd be in a completely different court that dead ends before you can take it to the Supreme Court. It'd be the Court of Claims. Mm-hmm. So we had to do it our way, because if we did it with lawyers, we would end up in a dead end. So we knew that we had a First Amendment protected right to petition the government for redress of grievances. We had other amendments protecting our rights for due process. And so we decided to do that ourselves. And my brother had extensive experience representing himself in state and federal court, and even successfully docketed as a pro se, representing himself with two petitions at the Supreme Court. So you could do a docket search, Derong, D-E-R-O-N-G, Brunson, and you can find two of his petitions. And one of them has something to do with equitable maxim and the object principle of justice. And so that's a whole nother story.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about the case specifically, and the claims in the case. So this isn't a case about election fraud, but I think it's safe to say that without election fraud, maybe we wouldn't be here, because this is really about the Congress abdicating their responsibilities and their constitutional duties.
Absolutely. This really is a case for anyone and everyone that wants an honest representative, because it's not, as you said, it's not about that. It's not a political. It's not a party. We're suing Republicans, Democrats, and even Bernie Sanders as a defendant. And he's a, you know, he's an out of the closet socialist, right? So we're not, you know, we're not like picking favorites. It's every single member of Congress and those that participated in rejecting an investigation into what you would say a very serious national security breach is what it was. When you have 100 members of Congress, witnesses with a mountain of evidence, and saying that it's important we investigate these claims so that we can know that we can proceed forward without, you know, breaching our national security, and all the others vote against it and reject it. I mean, it's just unbelievably wrong. And it was a violation of the oath of office to reject that. And there were plenty of, I tell you, I've never seen so many Democrats wave the Constitution and say, I've got an oath, keep the Constitution, which is great, because this is, it'll help them. It'll be good for them with this case. But so here they are waving the Constitution and say, we have a constitutional obligation. Even, you know, a lot of Republicans do. Mm-hmm. And it's like what they should have said is, we have a constitutional obligation to make sure we're certifying a real electoral vote. Mm-hmm. And if there's fraud involved, then it's not an electoral vote. It's something else.
Right.
And so they needed to take at least a 10-day pause and check it out. And because they didn't, they are putting this country at risk. They put look at the damage that's been caused.
So true.
And so they not only can they be removed from office constitutionally, the U.S. and I think attorneys would agree that they have the power, whether they do it or not, they definitely have the power to remove them from office, and also bar them from holding office the rest of their lives, and then refer them to the Department of Justice, the new Department of Justice, it'd be a new one after this happens, for criminal investigation. So
So tell me, what exactly would be the best possible outcome? January 6th, the Supreme Court gets together in session. They talk about this. And then what would be the outcome if you get what you're asking for?
Well, I don't think they're going to set January 6th and then go to conference. Under Rule 11 and under it, if they deem a petition as a national emergency, they can do much more than just reverse a lower court's decision or uphold a lower court's decision. They can actually completely adjudicate. They can judge and execute the full complaint. And they can do it behind closed doors. They can do it in private sessions. So because of it's national emergency level. So the best case scenario to me is like by Christmas time or January 3rd rolls around and we find out that actually before then maybe, that the Supreme Court has ordered the circuit court or done it themselves, ordered the U.S. Marshal Service to go to the Sergeant-at-Arms with the list of names that where the credentials need to be canceled. And so you'd have about 387 federal officers' credentials be canceled. And then maybe the states would be notified that they needed to fill those vacancies. And then also we could have special operation teams that are military, that are broadcast teams that know how to handle broadcast stations, and they could go in a very peaceful way, and they could, they could take over the stations just temporarily until this is all figured out. The Federal Communication Commission directors are appointed by the president, and they all take a constitutional oath. So if their broadcast stations that they supervise and direct are allowing information and false information to be broadcast that would compromise the security of this country and also would compromise the Constitution of the United States, then they have they could actually be added to as defendants. There's a list of 388 defendants, but there's also John Doe's 1 through 100. So they could actually add additional names to the defendants and kind of clean house that way. And so it actually could be a smooth transition where there's all these opportunities for people that were running against these people, you know, every 2 years and every 6 years anyway, where they could enter their own campaigns to replace these individuals and fill those vacancies. And then the broadcast houses would be reporting the truth and let people know there's nothing to be worried about. This is a smooth transition. We're just replacing members of Congress because they failed their duties, and the states are going to replace, you know, those members of Congress, and everything's going to be fine. And then they could be reporting the news in real time instead of the political political biased propaganda that we've been seeing through the airways so much. So I think that'd be the best case scenario for me. I think it could be a very smooth transition. And I think instead of fallout, we could focus on the campaigns that would in every state that would millions and millions of dollars promoting campaigns supporting this position of removing these disqualified representatives with members of Congress that can keep their oath. Another aspect of the case is this would strip immunity. So Article 6 of the Constitution is very clear when it states that all of our federal, state, and local representatives or officers shall be bound by oath to this Constitution. So they've given themselves immunity with the federal statutes. And even in California, they have perjury laws that the wording excludes politicians and taking the oath of office.
Right.
So I think there's a lot of positive that could come from this. And I tell people, tell your Democrat friends or Republican friends that this is a win-win. This is something both parties can actually agree on. If you want honest candidates and honest representatives, there's some people listed as defendants that I think Democrats would be happy that are listed. And I think a lot of Republicans will feel the same way about the, you know, names that are listed that they would like to see removed. So I try to be positive about it. I think it could be actually a pretty positive transition. The world wouldn't come to an end.
I tend to agree with you.
Better.
I totally agree with you, and I think the audience would as well. What would you say to perhaps left-wing critics who would look at a case like this and the possible implications and say, well, of course, that could never happen because it would just be too much of a disturbance? It's like, you know, despite the fact that they actually did abdicate their oath, that they have turned on the American people, they have not done what they were supposed to do. They're representing themselves, not the people that voted for them. You know, what would you say to those left-wing pundits who might say that this could never happen?
I don't think they would. I think they would encourage it because they all have friends and associates that they want to help campaign and get into office. And again, it's about honest representation. It's not like removing permanently those positions. They're there. And so, and it's about the Constitution. It's not about any interpretation of the Constitution. I mean, Who would disagree with a 10-day investigation? Now, if it had been reversed and the Republicans had won, do you think that those people would have, under the same circumstances, would have, you know?
No, they would have been all over it.
Yeah. Of course. Every one of them. So it's about an investigation if there are witnesses saying that there should be. And why shouldn't they be? I mean, this is our elections are probably the most critical and the most vulnerable to outside interference and to domestic enemies. And the
Certainly.
Members of Congress have sworn to uphold and defend the Constitution against all enemies, domestic and foreign. And what better way to do that than to investigate claims that there could be some enemies that are infiltrating our election system and check out and find out what's happening before you move on and you without a 10-day investigation.
Well, certainly from my own personal perspective, I think that the reason that they chose not to look into it and the reason they kind of just gloss over the possibility of bad actors in our election system is because they know that the system is corrupted. They know that there are certain points at which it's possible to cheat, and it happens on a regular basis, because I think people in both parties are benefiting from the system and the way that it's set up.
Sure.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's just
that's not our position, really. Our position is that there should have been an investigation, and there wasn't. Mm-hmm. And if there's cause for a referral to the Department of Justice for criminal investigation, so be it. But this is a civil case that has nothing to do with that. But the Supreme Court can certainly refer certain members over for investigation, and that could uncover a whole lot of stuff. Now, one of our causes of action is a civil conspiracy, and so. When you have one attorney representing 388 defendants, that can be really problematic. But the Solicitor General, I think, really did the right thing. And a lot of people say, oh, they do it because they don't think there's any merit to it. It's like, wait a second. They don't think there's any merit to the justices. They don't like how the justices think. So, no, I think Elizabeth Preloader did the right thing in her heart. She knew. I'm going to say that she saw that this was about the Constitution. It was about the oath of office. It wasn't about Democrats or Republicans. And it was about, you know, upholding the Constitution and removing, you know, immunity. And I think she's been known to represent the government and shift her position without talking to any other government officials. And so she's a very independent woman. So she could be working with the justices as well to help with a smooth transition. I mean, she could concede. And then the justices would feel like, okay, we've got the Solicitor General on our side, and I think it's very possible to see a 9-0 vote because it's not a political thing. And I think all the justices would agree that we should have, you know, we should have members of Congress that are going to pause for a 10-day investigation. I mean, 100 members, credible members of Congress would say that it was their position, and I think we know that they're right, don't we?
Oh, absolutely, no, 100%. So. What do you think the timeline is going to be on this? Do you think that that once we get to the date of January 6th, that it'll be wrapped up very quickly, or is this something you think might drag on?
Well, I'm hoping it would be all taken care of by then, but I could be wrong. Who knows what their resources are and what the mechanisms are in place that would come to some equitable and smooth conclusion. And so I just don't know what the resources are. If we did, we could kind of guess what's going to happen. But I love the fact that they said in January 6th, it's almost like they have a plan in place. It's like, it's like, you know, it's because that could be provocative. If they wanted to be really super careful, they would make sure that it wasn't set for January 6th. It's sort of a message of hope, isn't it? That the case that is based on January 6th, it's a 2-year anniversary. And it's like, it's kind of a memorialization of a great event that's about to take place. And it would be, the justices would go down in history probably as the most powerful and patriotic justices we've had in the history of this country. And Elizabeth Preloader could as well go down as the most famous and constitutional and heroic Solicitor General we've ever had. And then the replacements of all these members of Congress coming in, knowing that their oath now is supposed to be binding and that they're accountable, and they better read the Constitution, understand it, and not do anything that they could be liable for. It could create a whole new climate, a whole new, complete new landscape. And so I'm really hopeful. My brothers are hopeful. A lot of miracles have happened to us leading to this point. Really just unbelievable things to get us all to this point in our lives and in this point in history at this specific time. that we believe the miracles are going to just keep happening. So we're pretty optimistic.
I like to hear that. Over on Rumble, SF Think says, with how the Democrats handled Roe versus Wade, how do you think they would handle Supreme Court decision in favor of this? Do you think that that has any bearing?
Roe versus Wade didn't open up 380 some odd opportunities to run for office, and this would. So, and it's about replacing them with different Democrats, different Republicans, you know, but the oath would be in place. So I think this has never been done before. This would be, we don't know what would happen. This could be the most smooth, positive, exciting transition. And look at all the campaigns where they're spending hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars to replace those members of Congress to fill those vacancies. I mean, that's a tremendous amount of positive pushback instead of negative. Mm-hmm. So I think that they would support it. And if they didn't, it would be like, oh, you don't want it honest. You don't believe the oath should be binding. You think you should have immunity. I mean, this is a very interesting situation. And I think I think the Lord is in play here. And I think he's going to inspire them to do the right thing.
Lee, do you know if this argument has ever been used to remove public officials in the past?
I don't know of any case. And like I said, this was allowed to move forward to the Supreme Court without the 10th Circuit Court decision, which under Rule 11 of the Supreme Court. So, you know, maybe the 10th Circuit had never heard of it before because they thought that they could just sit on it, and they shouldn't have. Mm-hmm. And maybe the Supreme Court was reminded. Remember Amy Coney Barrett when she was in a Senate hearing before she was she appointed and confirmed, as she was asked to share a little constitutional knowledge with the viewers, and the senator said, could you just share the protections, what rights are protected in the First Amendment? And she said speech and religion and assembly and the press, and she couldn't remember the fifth one. And so if she couldn't remember the fifth one, which is what we're doing, petition for redress of grievances, and this would open up a whole new opportunity for everyone to file civil lawsuits against the representatives for damages. If she couldn't remember that, then what makes us think that they might have even been aware of her Rule 11? Maybe through their history they had read about it, you know, because the last one that someone said that they saw a Rule 11 was, you know, the Nixon administration. So this is a whole new ballgame for them too. But I believe in inspiration. I believe in divine intervention. The founders believed in it. The signers of the Declaration said they could not have accomplished what they accomplished without divine intervention. They saw the miracles. They saw the, I guess you could say, just extreme coincidences and things flip just to the right direction. And so I think this could be a modern-day miracle. It could be a modern-day George Washington or the founders' moment signing the Declaration of Independence. This could go down. You know, someone even mentioned that the petition that they could have it signed by the justices and put next to the Constitution, you know, for people to view. And so who knows what can happen? We're just excited that we've gotten to this point. It's raising awareness about the power of the Constitution and how the oath has been really violated, and their immunity as the fake unconstitutional immunity. They've been allowed to just do whatever they want. So there have been a lot of good things happening from this already, and it's just picking up momentum. We're getting a lot of letters. We're getting thousands of letters now that are copied of what they're sending to the Supreme Court. And they're heartfelt letters. I read some of them today. It's just incredible. These incredible patriots out there. Just in the last 3 days, it's like exponentially doubled. It's gone from like a couple hundred to now it's like close to probably 7,000 in just 2 or 3 days. So it's really starting to grow and explode. And it's a really positive thing. And why not hope for a great big miracle and a heroic, time that we can really celebrate New Year's and the 4th of July like never before.
Amen. I'm right there with you. I'm glad you brought up the letter writing campaign because one of the viewers of this program, Key West Jess, who actually put us in touch, she and a number of other people have put together a form letter that you can go ahead and send into the Supreme Court yourself, letting them know that you support Loy and his brother's actions and how important this case is to you. I'm going to go ahead and show that to you guys on screen, and then I'm going to go ahead and drop the link to this into all of the chats. And I am going to request that you guys also take part in this campaign. You know, because, Loyo, I mean, it seems like the justices are already aware of the possible implications and importance of this case. And just how much more impactful, guys, do you think it could be if we have tens of thousands of American citizens writing in and saying, yes, absolutely, these congressmen, they denounced their oath. They are no longer representing the will of the American people, and we have to do something about it. You know, I mean, it's not all that often that they bother to ask us what grievances we might have. Most oftentimes, they're not interested at all, it seems like.
Well, this is, like you said, this is an incredible opportunity, historical opportunity. Can you imagine 75 million letters? Oh, yes. What the influence that would be? I mean, how many people were at on January 6th at Washington, D.C.? If just every one of those people wrote a letter. This is like being able to go to Washington, D.C., a much better without spending the money and the time and the fuel by sending letters in, positive letters, friends of the court is the term for it. You're a friend of the court and you're encouraging them to do the right thing and tell them you support them in the right decision and how it affects you personally. And so I can send you a link to a couple of links that are really great presentations on helping people do the letter writing and sending a copy to the court, sending a copy to the Brunson brothers. So it's like a receipt. We'll file those and keep them and have them categorized. And then they were asking a pretty cool one campaign says, put a dollar in for the Brunson brothers. That's pretty cool. I wouldn't complain about that. And so
I'm sure. I mean, that's definitely something I would support as well. And your website, you had mentioned it earlier, 7discoveries.com. Have that link down there in the description, guys. But right. You can go there and you guys can actually purchase copies of the filings. And this is obviously to support your efforts. I mean, this is time. This is money. How much money have you gentlemen expended on this so far?
Well, we've more than money. We've just sacrificed a lot. And there's been some financial losses because of it. But we've represented ourselves. So it's been a tremendous financial loss, relatively. And so, but it's been worth it. I mean, we're glad. I wouldn't change it for things. So, a dollar in an envelope, that means a lot. Emotionally, it means a lot. And financially, it means a lot. So, and there could be, I mean, there's a potential of more litigation fees going into, let's say we go into, after conference, go into a hearing. I really, that just doesn't make sense to me. I hate even talking about that possibility, but, we've had attorneys tell us that if we had hired attorneys and had them do this, we're looking at $1 million to $2 million in litigation over the past couple of years. Because we had three lawsuits. We have the federal lawsuits identical to my brother's federal lawsuit that started in state court. Plus, we took two federal courts to state court. And we got them to unblock. We were suing them to unblock my case. And after that was all done, they unblocked it and filed it for me after they refused to do that. And not only that, they ordered the clerk of the court to issue the 388 summonses. Before that happened, they actually canceled my complaint, and then they reinstated it. They canceled it after the docket reflected that the U.S. Marshals Service had served Nancy Pelosi, Maxine Waters, and Adam Schiff, that the U.S. Marshals had actually served there my summons and complaint. And then the court canceled it, called it back. So that's when we litigated with them and got them to reverse the decision and file it.
So they canceled it. what reason did they have to allow it to come back after they canceled it? I don't understand what the process is for that.
Yeah, it was really weird. They claimed that my complaint was deficient. Now, a court can't say your complaint's deficient. That's up to the defense attorney, if you're suing someone, to file a motion to dismiss it. So they were really wrong in doing it. And so that's why we took them to the 10th Circuit. 10th Circuit just basically said, oh, they're not going to block it. They're not violating your rights. And I was like, no, they are. And so we took them to state court and battled there. And after we actually lost in state court. We were so busy going back and forth, we missed a deadline to appeal it. But there's still something we could probably do there. So but after we litigated there, a few weeks later, we got this notice that they did what we were asking them to do. They filed it. They didn't say, give me permission to file it. They filed it for me. Actually filed my lawsuit and issued and ordered the clerk of the court to issue 388 summonses. So we prepared them and took them over, and the clerk of the court signed them and stamped them as issued. So that's another story.
Why do you think they did that for you? I mean, that obviously sounds a little out of the norm. Is it because they realized how badly they screwed up initially?
Well, I think so. I think the point is, this is really such a clear-cut case with the Supreme Court, because it's about the oath of office The Supreme Court justices have taken two constitutional oaths. Mm-hmm. One is a judicial oath, which includes the Constitution. And then the other one is more of the Constitution that's probably identical to the congressional oath. So they've taken two oaths to the Constitution. I think they're reading our documents. These documents, the complaint and the petition, it's an expose on the Constitution and the oath of office that's been neglected and ignored. So here it is. We actually, the whole case is based on the Constitution, the oath of office, without getting into any interpretations whatsoever. So how can they possibly say, no, there needs to be immunity. We shouldn't have a binding oath. How could they possibly do that?
It's so fundamental.
Yeah.
So I just need to say thank you real briefly to Key West Jess. She said, thank you for sharing the letter and to both of you for what you're doing. She also said, everyone who went to January 6th, 2020 should be sending letters. It's the exact reason that we were there. Will success of this case positively influence the January 6th prisoners? I would absolutely say so, because right now we've had too many people.
They'd probably be able to file civil claims against those that were responsible for putting them for damages. And that's what this is. This is a civil claim. It's for damages personally, so they would probably have a lot of opportunity to recover damages for and punitive damages for what's happened to them.
And then also to Q Fox Yoder says, thank you, Zach, and bless you, Loy, as well. Thank you for those donations, guys. Really appreciate it. Once again, go to 7discoveries.com. Also, you can support Loy, his brothers, and their case efforts there. Can I ask you just a little bit about the specifics again of the case? You say that you're really just spelling out the Constitution. I mean, what is the flow of this? And, how is it presented that that the congressmen and people in government had completely denied their oath?
Well, it's a constitutional issue. And that's the biggest thing is we quote Article 6 of the Constitution, where the words are very clear that they shall be bound by oath. And then U.S. Code Title 28 says that they have immunity. And then they won't let us sue in federal court. We have to go to, if you're going to sue a representative, you have to go to a claims court. You can't even go in federal court or state court. So due process rights are being violated. Mm-hmm. So it's a violation of the oath of office. It's actually a form of treason. It's depriving me, the plaintiff's rights of their constitutionally protected right to participate in an honest and sound constitutional election. It's a security breach that has the potential of completely devastating this country and our own security. So there's several causes of action there that are connected to constitutional authority as well as case law.
So the T word, treason, that's the big one right there. That's a lot worse than just losing your position. If you're found guilty of treason, I mean, you're talking about, up to and including execution.
Yeah, so this is a civil case, and then the criminal investigation could happen. Congress has defined the penalties for treason. I don't remember exactly, but I know the high treason is capital punishment, and low treason is being barred from holding public office the rest of your life, and a fine and a jail term. So that's a pretty, and then it's treason is defined as giving aid and comfort to enemies of the United States and any foreign or domestic entity that infiltrates and compromises our election would be guilty of giving aid and comfort to, to enemies of the United States. And they could be classified as enemies, domestic enemies of the United States. That'd be something to ask a representative that they've sworn to uphold and defend the Constitution against foreign and domestic enemies. Could they explain what a domestic enemy is? Mm-hmm. And have they ever defended the Constitution against a domestic enemy? Well, here was their opportunity to do it in 380 somewhat failed to do that. So that's a violation of the oath, and they need to be removed and barred from holding public office ever again so that there's no more national security breaches where they are. They should be permanently removed and let new people come in that don't have that kind of a bad record.
Sure.
Just like hiring a security guard, if he's letting people in, if he lets one person in that he's not supposed to let in, that's a breach. You're firing.
Absolutely.
And you don't ever hire them again. You get someone that's going to do 100%. People have compared people like being 99% constitutional and 1% not. It's like, you probably heard this. It's like being faithful to your wife 99% of the time.
Doesn't work.
I'm sure she would not be too happy with that.
No, No. It's all or nothing. It's all or nothing.
Exactly. You don't want any breaches. You don't want even a crack. You know, it's like being on a ship and seeing a little piece of ice sticking up, and your crew comes and says, "Oh, there's an iceberg there, but it's just a little one." It's like, excuse me. Yeah. We need to investigate. We need to pause and take a 10-minute investigation here and see what's beneath it, right?
Exactly.
And they didn't do that. There was an iceberg that's sticking up, and it was a pretty good-sized iceberg. And they all said, no, we don't investigate it. There's nothing there. I was like, how do they know if they don't investigate it? So it was an egregious, complete, total violation of their oath of office in defending the Constitution and this great republic against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
Certainly was. You know, I mean, I remember in, what was it? The Hanging Chads. I live in Florida. So the Hanging Chads down in Florida, you know, I mean, they spent what seemed like a lot longer than 10 days investigating what happened there. And, you know, I mean, they were perfectly willing to take a breath, sit back and investigate what had actually happened in that election. And I mean, it just seems so obvious, so elementary. You know, I mean, like you have a number of different people, you know, many, many people in a number of different states, all who had concerns about the election. It was, you know, probably a majority of America, if you really want to get down to the heart of it. And they just were not willing to do anything about it. They immediately turned around. And, you know, I mean, as somebody who has covered these, you know, these subjects for a very long time, you know, I mean, what happened on January 6th truly, I think, did stop any positive forward momentum that we had going into that. You know, the people who set up January 6th, that orchestrated event to take place, they were instrumental in ensuring that the people who did support that in Congress were no longer going to want to be anywhere near it. And so it just went away. There was no investigations and nobody bothered to challenge anything. So, I mean, I'm just the fact that this is scheduled for January 6th is just, it blows my mind. And I can't wait to see what comes of this. Can you define Rule 11 for me? Because we've kind of like talked about it a few times, but I don't know that everybody is aware of what exactly Rule 11 is.
Yeah. First, I'd like to mention that these people that refused an investigation when there was a mountain of evidence and 100 witnesses are the same people that investigated nothing and used it as a weapon.
Yep.
You know, the FISA thing and the Russia gate and all this stuff. I mean, talk about double, you know, hypocritical kind of stuff. So,
I mean, how many tens of millions of dollars and how much time and how many man hours were wasted investigating all of those fake scandals surrounding President Trump, just witch hunt after witch hunt? They couldn't spend 10 days looking into the election of 2020 and making the American people feel that they had actually done something to ensure the safety and security of our elections. It is ridiculous. Cool.
And those records could be used in criminal investigation against them.
Okay.
All that stuff that they launched with the FISA, all that stuff. So, let me just explain Rule 11. There are rules of civil procedure in state court, and every state are a little different. And there's federal rules of civil procedure, and they're the same in all the states. And then the Supreme Court actually has their own rules. Okay. And they have special rules that they've set for themselves. And Rule 11 is a very special rule where you can either bypass, I believe, the circuit court. You're supposed to, when you take a case to the Supreme Court, you're supposed to not go there until all the courts in between the beginning of, you know, the lower court to the highest court. In state court, you start with state, and then you go to the appellate court if you lose. And if you lose there, you go to the state Supreme Court. If you lose there, then you go to the U.S. Supreme Court. But you cannot go to the Supreme Court until you've gone through all those courts below it. Now, we hadn't gone through the final court. The Tenth Circuit was sitting on it. They hadn't done it. And so we did some research, and we found that the Supreme Court has a special rule that if you can convince them that it's a national emergency type case, then they will accept it and docket it as such without getting the final court decision.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we did. It wasn't docketed that way, but we received a phone call telling us that they wanted us to add more stuff and that they agreed to docket it that way. But then the 10th Circuit must have found out, and they didn't want to look bad by dragging their feet and sitting on a case for 4 months that now the Supreme Court is recognizing as a national emergency, but it's already a black mark against them because they sat on it for so long. They sat on this case for 4 months, and now the Supreme Court is saying it's a national emergency. That doesn't make them look too good, does it?
No, it doesn't.
And so they accepted it that way, and then the Tenth Circuit hurried and made a decision, because they probably didn't want to go down in history as not making a decision, but it was a bad decision. And so that's what it is. This case was accepted as a national emergency case, and that's why with that Rule 11, even though it's not, doesn't say that on the case right now, it is still a national emergency case. And because of that, they can completely adjudicate, judge it, execute it, and they can take any action they seem is necessary to secure the interest and secure to establish the national security of this country that it needs to have. That security breach created a big, big problem, and the breach needs to be fixed. And so the Supreme Court now has the power and the obligation to fix that breach. Now, something really special about the Supreme Court, you hear people say the three equal branches of government. Well, when we do a petition, we weren't petitioning the Congress or the president. And it's amazing. The petition for redress of grievances is supposed to be where you can take your case straight to the Supreme Court. And the fact that our Congress has made laws diverting that, where you can't go to the Supreme Court by having to go to a claims court and get permission, all that stuff, mm-hmm. is an obvious breach or a violation of our constitutional rights. So Rule 11 means it's a national security type case, and they can take every action necessary to fix the breach or fix the whatever's causing it to be an emergency.
Lloyd, can you tell me, what does your background say? Because you're in front of it, but I mean, it seems like there's a special message there.
Oh, that's my latest Constitution book. Okay. I have the Constitution for federal, state, and local officials. That's the 2020 version or edition. Now I have the 2023, which has everything that in it plus a little more. And it also has well, I'll give you an example. I've discovered some things in the Constitution I claim that have never been published before. Really amazing discoveries. And I know how audacious that sounds. You know, that, for example, I was at a trade show, a conservative kind of a trade show, and there were people walking past my friend's table. I says, hey, I think I'll see if I can sell it, get a donation for my books. I printed 10,000 of them, and I feel like I had to do to get them out there, right? And so this man was walking past. I said, hi, I've discovered some concepts in the Constitution that are revolutionary that have never been published before. Can I share one of them with you? And he stopped. He got this look. He was a really nice guy. He stopped and pulled out his Constitution, his part of the Constitution, the one with George Washington's picture on it. And he says, you can show me something in this that I've never found before, I've never recognized before. I says, yeah, and if I do, would you go ahead and give me a donation for the book and so I can print more of them. He says, okay, give me your best shot. Let's see, what can you do? And I says, okay. I said, well, the first 10 amendments were really identified by Congress as further declaratory and restrictive clauses to the 7 articles. So they're pretty powerful. Now, what I found is that there's an interpretation clause in the document. There's a clause that that forces us to only interpretation or requires us to only interpretation to it. Forces us to only interpret the Constitution in ways that protect our God-given rights. Mm-hmm. And I say that that's the Ninth Amendment. And it goes like this. The enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. I said, to me, this was the voice of God. And this is the interpretation clause telling us, warning us that you cannot interpret the Constitution in any way unless it is a protection, unless it's interpreted in a way that protects our God-given unalienable rights. And any other interpretation of that, according to the Ninth Amendment, is a misinterpretation mm-hmm. and cannot be accepted as a constitutional interpretation. And I said, I also feel like it's the voice of God. When I read it for the first time, I just felt like it was God speaking. It was like, one of the commandments, shall not be construed to deny mm-hmm. or disparage others retained by the people. And so he looked at me and he put his hand in his pocket and he pulled out his wallet and pulled out a 20 and handed it to me and took the book and walked away.
I mean, it certainly sounds like your interpretation is correct. I mean, that's the only thing that makes any sense. So what else? I mean, well, actually, now that we know that you're writing books as well, when did you first begin publishing your work?
Back about 8 years ago. I've had several of them just self-published, but this last one, I printed 10,000 and I'm out. And people are kind of wanting to, they've ordered them, and I'm telling them, please be patient. We're in the middle of printing right now, another maybe 10 to 11,000, I think we're going to print. And it's pocket size, but it's much more than just the Constitution. It has the Constitution, Declaration of Independence, the amendments, but it also has Q&A in the back. Questions that I think some of these questions have never been asked before, at least not published before. Mm-hmm. And a section there, one section is how and why promoting socialism is a felony. It's actually a conspiracy to commit felony theft. That's what it is.
I would love to hear this. Go ahead.
So that, and then I have Benjamin Franklin's no tax plan, and I get into central banking. My focus is the Federal Reserve System. People need to know where money comes from before they can really understand the Constitution. And I tell people, if you were to ask your representative to show you a clause in the Constitution that prohibits socialism, they wouldn't be able to do it unless they have my book. And so then I go back, but I explain that. I said, there are a couple of clauses. You know, 13th Amendment involuntary servitude is against the law, right?
Yeah.
And also the last line of the Fifth Amendment is my favorite. It defines socialism and it also prohibits it. The last line states, nor shall private property be taken for public use. Private property includes your money. Be taken for public use without just compensation.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a pushback too. And there are political reasons why people would push, politicians would push back against that. I think the Federal Reserve money in some ways trickled into their own protection through campaigns. Sure. And the 1913 Federal Reserve Act, what happened? One of the first things that these bankers did with their money was buy a major newspaper, and they've been buying media ever since. So and they own publication houses. So we don't learn what money is. I called the Bureau of Engraving and Printing once as I was doing my research, and a lady answered the phone. I didn't think anyone would, but she answered the phone and says, hey, tell me when the money is printed. And I knew I'd been told that a $100 bill cost about 15 cents to produce a $100 bill. I says, what happens? What do you do with the money? And she says, we sell it. And I'm thinking, you sell it to who? She says, we sell it. We have one exclusive customer, and that's the Federal Reserve System. Now, we know the Federal Reserve System is a private corporation. It's not it's not a real branch of the government, okay? And she says, and we sell it at cost. So they're selling it for about 15 cents for a $100 bill. I mean, this is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Federal Reserve System is a nonprofit entity. And our Congress is supposed to protect us from counterfeiters. And so the Federal Reserve System, when they create $1 trillion, that $1 trillion is supposed to be 100% pure profit for the Treasury, not tax debt, tax debt. And so they're supposed to only keep their operating expenses. So I was talking to Stephen Moore about this. Maybe you know him. He's been on Fox News a lot. He was chief economics advisor for Donald Trump. And I says, you know, just in really simple terms, if we were able to enforce the nonprofit status of the Federal Reserve, every trillion that they created would be profit for the Treasury instead of tax debt. Mm-hmm. And that would eliminate the need for taxation in simple terms. And he looked at me and says, you know, you're right. And so he says, let me take your book. I'll read it on the plane. But to talk about it, this is so extreme to talk about it because it just has so many implications that are, you know, I've talked to Senator Hatch about this, if you remember him, back in the day. And when I was actually running against him for U.S. Senate. And he admitted it. He says, yeah. I said, you know, they don't return the principal. That's profit. He says, they don't even return the interest. They return a few million every year, a few token million. They should be returning trillions.
Yep.
And so, and I've talked to other people about it too. Congressman Alan Grayson, he agreed to have an appointment with me to talk about the Fed with Mike Lee. And I flew out there for that. And Mike Lee kind of flaked out. And Alan Grayson didn't show up. So I go to Alan Grayson's office, Congressman Grayson's office, and told them that why didn't he show up? And they told me that Mike Lee, his office had canceled my appointment the day before. I thought, what's going on? What's going on, Senator Lee? You canceled my appointment. Don't tell me. And then I come in and you show up for a couple of minutes and you send an intern in, you know? So anyway, it's
disrespectful.
Here's an opportunity. Yeah, here's an opportunity where the most liberal, most feared member of the House was willing to meet with one of the most conservative senators and talk about a common thing, the Federal Reserve System. And Mike Lee canceled the appointment and then refused to show up. So I'm sorry, Mike, you have to go. It's time to go.
Oh, I got to be honest. I'm not particularly surprised at that from Mike. You know, I mean, I've seen some behavior that would indicate to me that, you know, he would do something like that. But you're absolutely right. The Federal Reserve System is the biggest snow job on the American people that I can possibly imagine. You know, the United States was perfectly capable of printing and creating their own money. We didn't have to borrow it from anybody.
Did.
Yes, and
right.
we did.
You know, They did. United States No Dollars. I've written a parody on 16 Tons, and it's and so it gets into that a little bit. And also JFK started to do it. You know, but the thing about the Federal Reserve is they've shown that the money system works. And if we were just to eliminate the corruption, if we could replace, and they take an O2, so this could gut them. And they need to return the assets. They need to return all of the gains that they've achieved stealing our property from us. So this could be a huge I did another book talking about a tax refund. This could be a huge tax refund and the elimination of all tax altogether, completely, because it's not necessary.
Well, I mean, if there was no interest on the money that they created, then you're right. There would be no need to tax us for anything. But I mean, even that money that we're being taxed, I mean, it's not really paying off the money that the United States owes.
No, it's not. And they're not supposed to be charging interest. No. They're not even supposed to be charging the principal. Okay. No. They're only supposed to be keeping their operating expenses. So if we study the model, we'll see that it's really quite an incredible system that they've created, but it's in the wrong hands. Mm-hmm. So I tell people, don't dismantle it. Don't just destroy it and start with some gold standard idea or something. No. If we're able to take it over, just start eliminating the corruption and see what happens. Eliminate socialism, eliminate unconstitutional spending, eliminate the fact that they keep all the profit, you know, and then be very careful about how to inject it into the economy. So I have a little chapter in the book that you see behind me that talks about that and gets into it. But that's a discussion that's could be pretty exciting for people to see. The taxes, I mean, and Tucker, I've heard Tucker say this a couple of times, if money is created out of thin air, why are we being taxed for it?
Exactly.
At least we could stop there. We could enforce the nonprofit status. And if we wanted to back it with gold or silver, I've talked to people who feel like that has to happen. It's like, okay, let's back it with a trillionth of an ounce of gold, because Amendment 5 states you can't have your gold and silver taken from you for public use, and that's what it would be. We don't need to back it. So if they want it back, put a trillionth of an ounce of gold. I'm sure there's some people would be happy to donate quite a few ounces of gold to make up for that. And then if we have a constitutionally sound government, an honest government, it's no need for taxation right down to the local level.
So what do you think the perfect monetary system here in the United States would look like?
Well, I think it's what we have. You just eliminate the corruption, which would eliminate taxation. And it would have to be kind of rebuilt. I wouldn't just destroy it. But I don't want people taking our gold and silver. That happened before. And who ended up with the gold and the silver?
Absolutely.
The privately owned central bankers, right? So it's a discussion to be had. And if we just start eliminating, I say pick the low-hanging fruit. You know, don't dismantle something that's going to destroy the economy. Just start eliminating socialism and eliminating corrupt practices. Start allowing America to produce like it can its own oil and gas and construction supplies and goods and services and farming and all that stuff. And if we did all that, even under our current system, prices would go down drastically, and the competition would bring prices down. The quality would go up. And what they're doing, that's what I think gets a little confusion. Sure, paying people not to work, that affects the prices. But the main problem having to do with inflation, I don't think, is the amount of money that's in the economy, but it has much more to do with the restriction of the production of goods and services, especially fuel, gas, oil, and fertilizer, farming supplies, and that kind of stuff. I think that's the main culprit here. So we need to get rid of these representatives that are promoting and enabling all this corruption so we can start breathing again. You know, I did a little documentary. I haven't released it yet. And it was like, what would you do if you were president? You know, tell me in one sentence or less. Like, you could do it in less than a sentence, right? So Steve Forbes is one of them. I think there's the videos on YouTube. You can see it. And I said, Steve, what would you do if you were president? You know, just one quick little one sentence or less. And he says, I would get rid of the IRS. I'd get rid of the Fed and give America freedom back. Freedom again. It's like, all right. So it's Steve, let's see, John Stossel and Dinesh D'Souza participated in that. It was kind of fun. I want to do more of that.
Good stuff. Yeah, I mean, I think that that's probably the best thing we could do is, you know, I mean, how easy would it be for the federal government just federalize the infrastructure and the system that's already in place, just start printing our own money, you know, get rid of the board of governors, you know, no more Fed or, you know, or keep the Fed if they need to have some handle over monetary
just
policy.
Just enforce its nonprofit status and put good, honorable people that are subject to the oath of office, you know, that are real oath takers in there. We would have a fantastic system.
You know, one of the problems is
lack of comprehension or understanding of the Constitution. I mean, civics isn't taught. People are not studying the Constitution anymore. Certainly, they're not teaching it in schools. And I think a lot of these people that end up taking the oath, they don't know what's in the Constitution. They don't really know what they're taking an oath to. They've never read it.
And actually, if you study the Constitution based on what teachers teach it, there's contradictions. That's why it's important to get my book that you're seeing behind me. Yeah. Is it connects the dots and shows that the contradictions can be explained, and that it's a perfect document. It's unbelievable. It's incredible. But you have to understand money. You know, I asked a few people. I remember I asked a congressman, a conservative. I'm not going to mention his name because I don't want to, you know, do that. But I said when the U.S. Bureau of Engraving and Printing prints a $100 bill, the cost is about 15 cents. That leaves about $99.85 profit. I said, whose profit is it? And this is a famous member of the U.S. House of Representatives, a conservative, really a great man. And he looked at me and he said, I don't know. And I'm thinking, you guys are so busy. You're so swamped with less important things that you're missing the big picture. Mm-hmm. It's like you go back to Washington, D.C., like you're going to go to a flooded basement and you're mopping it up and you're not going to the valve and shutting it off. And so you need to go to the valve and shut it off. And the money thing is the valve. You got to shut that off. You got to get to the bottom of that. And I remember there was a congressional hearing on YouTube, and I think it was Alan Grayson who was asking where $9 trillion went. And it was Bernanke or someone like that that was saying, well, first of all, you don't need to worry about it because it's not part of the tax debt. So it's like, oh, they created $9 trillion and did something with it. So he says, well, who got the money? Who got the $9 trillion? And the representative of the Federal Reserve said, we can't disclose the identities of the recipients because of contractual reasons. It would cause problems if we revealed who received those $9 trillion. It's like, protects us against enemies, domestic and foreign. We're mm-hmm. allowing $9 trillion to go to foreign entities and we haven't got a clue who they are. And what happened to the other members of Congress? They should have been all over that mm-hmm. when they were in that hearing. That should have exploded, but it didn't, did it? It didn't. And maybe it's because they're receiving money.
Oh, maybe certainly.
They're receiving money from it all. And so the Congress is supposed to protect us against attacks on our currency. And what are they doing? They're protecting the enemy who owns our currency and taking it over.
They're compromised. I mean, it's just that's the most obvious thing.
So they need to go.
Yeah.
They need to go. They need to be removed and replaced.
All right.
And hopefully this case will do it.
I certainly hope so, too. I'm going to be buying your book. I'm really looking forward to that. And I'll be presenting it to the audience as well. Highly suggest you guys do that. Is that available as well at 7Discoveries?
Yeah, 7discoveries.com. You can download a PDF version of it for $2.50. But the
hardbacks are nice.
Coming. We have some now in stock. We're just a little backward. We think we'll be able to, in a couple of days, be caught up. So those of you who have already ordered and haven't received it, please be patient. And we have a new shipment coming in, and we want to get this to every single person in America.
That's great. Yeah. Well, I will be buying both the electronic and the physical copy because obviously I can read that on my tablet and then I'll be able to get the physical copy in hand. But yes, you guys, people, you know, sometimes I think the general public doesn't necessarily understand how the sausage is made behind the scenes. You know, there's a lot of moving parts, especially printing and producing a product like this. Make sure that you give Loy the time to get you that book, and I'm sure you're going to enjoy it. I need to say thank you to Lonely Germany, says GTR Don. I don't know what that means, but thank you very much for the $20 donation. We've got two people on the line. You guys, the calls are open, so please feel free to jump on that Zoom information. You can see the phone number on screen right now with the meeting ID and the passcode. If you have Zoom installed on your computer or your phone, then you can use this link right here. Just click it, and then that will bring you into the call. Loy, I'm going to...
A human catastrophe is closing in. Nobody knows how far this one is going to go. You can feel the heat as tension is rising globally. War is expensive. Open a Noble Gold Investments IRA today, and you can claim a free 3-ounce silver American Virtue coin. Just use the promo code GOLD. Go to NobleGoldInvestments.com now.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
And to see if we have any additional questions over here on the Foxhole, which is one of the platforms we use.
My friend Sean Joe, thank you for that cookie. Average Joe Patriot, he says, prayers for Mark Lamb and family, also for the J6 prisoners. Much love. Yes, I don't know if you did you see this, that Sheriff Mark Lamb from Pinal County, Arizona, his son and his granddaughter died in a car accident last night or this morning. Terrible stuff, terrible stuff. Thank you to Sean Joe. Thank you to Ventmore. He says, Xmas wine cookie. I don't know what that means either. Rise Attire says, Donald Trump should pay the millions. Pay the millions for what? You're talking about January 6th at the beginning of the show. Okay, seven. Thank you for that. Can Pop Secret says, RP78, you always bring the best. Thank you very much for that cookie. Scout 65 says, thank you, RP, for everything you do. You and your shows are very appreciated. Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas to you as well. Luann V says, I sent my letter to SCOTUS. Let's inundate the office with support. Yes. And I would really like to hear from you guys and verify to me that you actually did send that letter, because I do calls to action all the time. People don't always respond or let me know that they're actually participating, but this is really something that it's a low bar, low threshold for you guys to get in on this one. You know, a piece of paper, printed off from your computer, you sign it. What is it? A stamp is, what, 59 cents or something like that? You send it off, send a copy to Loy and his brothers, and then send me an email. Thank you, Luann. Sean Joe, thank you again for those cookies. And then he also says, RP, what does he say about the crooked election process? Cannot operate under old elections. Loy, obviously, a lot of people watching the show believe that our system is just so corrupted that, you know, how do we get past that? But if we're replacing every elected official in the United States government, then that goes a long way towards doing that. What do you think about operating under this system?
We're stripping immunity, too. So this is retroactive. Yeah. So those people who have hurt us with violation, you know, with fraud happening with elections can be civilly liable retroactively. Right. So this is the Achilles heel. This could just completely change the whole climate. The justices have an opportunity to be superheroes here, which would affect everything having to do with fraud and politics and elections and everything else having to do with our government.
Okay, excellent. Rise Attire, he says, question, what about the congressman who wanted to have the trial? Also, how is the president's slot filled? So, yes, this is not just members of Congress. Joe Biden and Kamala Harris are also included as defendants, correct?
Exactly right. And that would be up to the justices and maybe up to the majority House leader, how that would be filled, you know, and then we'd probably have a special election. I don't know. It's just but remember, the case isn't about who we want in as president or vice president or members of Congress. This is simply to remove the breach and to remove those that participated or benefited from it that could have pushed back against it and didn't. So,
all right. And then about. Lonely German, get her done. Lonely German was saying get her done. Sorry, I didn't pick that up the first time. Rise Attire also says, so we heard Loy's best case scenario. What is the worst case scenario?
The worst case scenario may not be such a bad scenario, but time is of the essence here. What they could do is they could decide it not move forward, which would be that if they voted against it, it's like voting against the Constitution. It's sort of right. An act of treason by itself. But we're prepared with a motion for reconsideration where they can reconsider. And if we have more of a groundswell at that time, maybe we need a lot more activity and participation from we the people. Mm-hmm. And it's growing exponentially now. So if they decide to not let it move forward, we have a motion for reconsideration that would be backed up hopefully by 75 or 100 million letters, right?
Beautiful.
And that could change the mind.
Let's see. Liberty Bells says, Red Pill 78, thank you for all you do. Porpoiseful, thank you for that cookie. And then Patriots Win says, what's up, Red Pill? I appreciate all you do and have done and are truly the news now. Love you. Keep up the great work. Thank you very, very much for that. I appreciate that. Let's see. We're going to bring in our first caller. This is DJ Vector. Vector Loy is one of our Australian correspondents, a patriot from down under, who is a real compatriot in trying to save America and the world. Vector, you're on the air. How are you, buddy?
I'm great. Thank you for those kind words, Zach, my brother. I really appreciate you, and thank you for having me on again for the second day in a row. Hello, Loy. Very exciting. I really wanted to get on and speak to you because I've had a lot of people in the research and on community that have been contacting me the last few days and asking me exactly about this. And, you know, I have to say I was pretty negative about it, but after hearing you speak, I guess I'm a bit more positive and you might actually have something there. So I wish you the best of luck, sir, and I hope that's all going to work out. So Listen, maybe I've missed it here. Let's just say you win this case, whatever. Like, what's the remedy here? Are we looking to get Trump back? Like,
that's not the purpose of it. There are two purposes, main purpose of this case, and that is to strip the immunity laws. In California, they actually have an immunity. They actually have a perjury law that excludes politicians when they swear an oath to the Constitution. You can swear an oath in court and you're going to be and if you lie, you're accountable for perjury. But politicians have actually been given immunity. There are a lot of immunity statutes in states that are just completely against the U.S. Constitution and the state constitution. So what this would do, Article 6 of the Constitution, as I mentioned earlier, is very clear. It demands that the oath be binding, that they shall be bound by oath to this constitution. And that means they're subject to liability and they're subject to penalties. And they've maneuvered the laws in such a way to give themselves immunity, but those laws are unconstitutional, so they can be changed, they can be stricken. And that's one of the things that the justices could do is strip immunity. And the other is remove these people who should have investigated. You know, when you go to a police department and you say that there's a crime, they're obligated to investigate. And if not, they could actually be held liable criminally for not doing that. And when you have two witnesses, actually the Constitution states that two witnesses in a court of law can actually convict someone on treason. So when you have 100 witnesses claiming there are crimes and fraud and all kinds of horrible stuff going on that need to be investigated, and the other members of Congress refuse and vote against it, then they become accomplices to the damage. So the thing, it was a huge security breach, and that's what this case is about. It's not about the outcome of the election. It's not about whether there was a sufficient fraud or not. It was about when there's any evidence of crimes and malfeasance, you're obligated to investigate based on your oath and laws, and they failed to do that. So
don't they? Okay, so that having been said, if you see a crime and you don't report it, especially if it's a serious crime like a murder or something like that, you become an accessory to the crime if you don't report it. Is that a factor in any of this?
Well, it's even worse than that. You have it reported to you, and you're a police and you're law enforcement, and you don't investigate. And so if you say, hey, I saw a murder taking place, or someone is being, you know, hurt right now, and they don't investigate, they don't go out there, then they become a part of the crime. And so that's what happened, is all these witnesses saying, hey, here's a ton of evidence that we've had a national security breach. Mm-hmm. And just like I mentioned about the iceberg on a ship, you see something, you're going to investigate. You're going to make sure that it's a safe, that the waters are safe. You're going to make sure that there isn't an element having to do with this evidence, that there isn't something really serious, much more serious than what may seem on the surface. And they were supposed to investigate and check it out, make sure there's no connection to any really serious immediate threats to the national security and the threats of the Constitution. They've taken an oath to defend. So it's really about they failed to do their job. Their job is to be watchmen and defend us against breaches, and they failed to do that. And so it's like you would, if you had a security guard that was supposed to not let anyone through the gate, and they block maybe 500, but they let one in. They go, well, what's one? It's like, well, one can cause a lot of damage, and so you're fired. You know, certainly, you're not going to come back here. We're going to get someone that is going to keep, you know, do their job 100%, because just like a surgeon, you know, I had a friend, he says that we bury our mistakes. It's like, well, we can't afford that. We can't afford to have a security guard let one go and say, well, I'm 99% good, and just one. Well, which just one can cause a lot of damage. And so they blew it. They shouldn't have done that. They should have gone ahead with the investigation.
Sure did. Listen, Vector, we got to take a break for the second half of the show. I've got to play my sponsor ad. So stick around. We're going to be back in about 30 seconds. All right, we're back. Thank you very much. Now, Vector, somebody in the chat, G'day Sailor, says, do you know anything about the Australians or Canadians being adopted through to the U.S. Constitution because the Crown was caught in crimes against humanity and was dismantled? I've certainly not heard anything about that, and I would think that would be a stretch. But anything on your end, Vector?
The only thing I would say about that is that there's things that people have talked about Australia being incorporated and being unofficially the 51st state of the United States of America, especially after everything that happened in the Second World War. Mm-hmm. So I'm not really sure what's going on there. And there was also a coup that was allegedly put together by the the clowns in America and the MI5, MI6, whatever, in the 70s to depose Gough Whitlam or whoever it was that got the ass. Anyway, it's hard to explain. There's just so much gray area of what's going on here in Australia. And then there's the disappearance of Harold Holt and all this other kind of stuff. So there's a lot of dodgy stuff going on in Australia. It wouldn't surprise me. It'd be fascinating to know if we are a part of the United States in some way, because I've heard this said many times. And, you know, it's just such a weird relationship. We're part of the Commonwealth. We're part of the British Empire. Yet we've got our security arrangements with the United States, and it's all just so strange, especially the Five Eyes in particular, you know, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, England, et cetera. So what do you think about that? Is there any truth to that?
Loy, that was a hard no from you right off the bat. Have you heard anything about that? No, you're muted. Oh, no. I mean, I can see that it looks like your microphone is connected, but I can't hear anything. Vector, can you hear him?
No, I can't hear anything.
Yeah, still nothing coming through, Loy. I don't know if you can hear me either, but you can. You can. Okay, you can hear us, but we can't hear you. I don't know what's going on there. All right, we're waiting to see if that gets fixed.
I was going
to
say, while we're waiting, Zach, what does Loy think, especially? But what do you think as well? Can we trust the SCOTUS, the current Supreme Court? We've got, you know, Ketanji Brown Jackson on there. We've got some other people that are on the left there. But then we've also got Amy Coney Barrett and Justice Kavanaugh and Neil Gorsuch. So where are we at here? I don't want to make any comments about this, you know, the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, because, you know,
John Rogers,
or not.
Man.
But yes, but like, what do you think? Can we trust these people? Yes or no? I just don't trust that they're going to do the right thing, even if the law compels them to and the Constitution says they do. Like all these other branches of government, like, you know, shouldn't they have already acted? You know, what's this crap all the time that people that are going to court don't have standing in particular? How can people not have standing in a lot of these cases? There's just so much evidence of fraud. It's so blatant. And, you know, does this also connect in with the bonds for the win thing, you know, as far as the breaking of the oath is concerned? You know, thinking about Mickey there and what's happening with that. So, you know, is that another way that we can get them to essentially get into trouble because they've broken their oath and so they have a bond, all of these people? Does that fit into this as well? Go ahead.
Loy, your microphone is still not working. Oh, that's so weird. Yeah. I don't know what is going on, guys, because his microphone was working just fine, and then all of a sudden it stopped working. All right, so maybe if he leaves and comes back, then that'll go. So, from my perspective, Loy's case is all about that oath that all of these officials took to the Constitution, and it has nothing to do with political affiliation or beliefs. I mean, the interpretation of the Constitution is, fairly strict. I mean, you agree to uphold and defend that founding document. And if you don't uphold and defend that founding document, you've broken your oath, and that should disqualify you. But I understand what you're saying. I mean, if they take Loy's case and they throw it out and they say, no, you know, this has no merit or anything like that, then they're essentially saying that the Constitution has no merit. And the oath that these elected officials have taken doesn't mean anything. And so that kind of would invalidate the whole system of government that we have. So how can they not take this and move it along to a successful completion and actually give us the outcome that we're hoping for, which would be the disqualification of all of these people? Okay, let's bring Loy back in again and see if his microphone is working. Okay. And we're going to bring Loy back in. Loy, are you there?
Yeah. I'm here. Can you
yes.
hear me?
Praise yes. the Lord. Your okay. microphone works.
What happened? I'm using a cell phone, and when people call in, it's happened with other Zooms, and there's something you can do on your side that to reset the mic or something.
Huh.
unmute it, whatever. I don't know what it was, but they've been able to fix it. But it's, I thought I blocked calls from coming in, so I apologize for that.
Oh, it's okay.
But
it's that's a
good question. You know, we've analyzed, you know, you're talking about the justices. It's interesting. There have been several Supreme Court cases having to do with reinstating Trump. Okay. And there were some justices that voted in favor of that. You mentioned, you know, Alito and Clarence Thomas and John Roberts actually voted in favor of those. So that was pretty extreme. And then the Trump appointed justices voted against, you know, Barrett, Kavanaugh, Gorsuch. And so it's interesting. But now that we've had Roe versus Wade, they were all, you know, they were all in other cases that they basically, well, Roe versus Wade, didn't they basically swear on their mother's grave that they wouldn't reverse Roe versus Wade?
Yeah, they did.
They got into, right?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. And so that's been, so I think this, they've been threatened. And I think they've been threatened a lot more than we realized. They have been threatened publicly, which incites riot, which incites harm. You know, Chuck Schumer, you know, we're coming after you, Barrett. We're going to get you, Gorsuch. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was pretty brazen stuff. And so, and they're not protected in front of their homes. I've heard that some of these justices don't even live there anymore. I mean, it's their houses, but they can't stay there because of the threats. And then the threats to stack the court. And then all this horrible, crazy stuff that's going on where they're trying to convince people that they're not human, basically, that they can't figure out whether Ketanji Jackson Brown, she can't define a woman. What a lie. I mean, wasn't she there because she represented herself to be a woman to Joe Biden? And then she says she can't define a woman. I mean, good grief. So the fact that this case is only about the Constitution and upholding it and the oath, basically, and that these justices have been so attacked and they're so threatened, I think they might as well be the plaintiff. They might as well be the plaintiffs in this. So I think that the time has come where they know they have to do something because we're at a tipping point here. We don't know how bad it could get, and it's a slippery slope. So I personally think it's going to be a 9-0 vote. And I think the Solicitor General that's taken over, who signed a waiver, she could have gotten an extension. She could have said something. And she's
going to fault it.
She's famous for doing what she wants to do, regardless of who she's representing. So she could have, after that, she could have, she was raked over the coals and publicly humiliated by one of the defendants. I'm not going to say who it was, but I saw something going on with her. So she could, I don't think she'd have any problem at all going down in history as the most famous Solicitor General by conceding and saying, I concede. It's a clear cut case, but you justices, of course, you're going to do what you want, but this is my position. And that's why I filed a waiver. So I think I'm very positive. I think it's right now it's educating people in the power of the Constitution is supposed to have and the oath of office is supposed to have. So
I'm going to go, Lloyd, but I really appreciate that. And you're educating me about the Constitution as well. I know there's a lot of people that are waiting on. I just wanted to thank you for your work. And you've answered a lot of questions for me and a lot of Patriot Anons out there that are working on this. So let's hope that gives everyone a little bit of hope. Thank you so much, Zach. And let's hope these people can be put in jail.
Fuck you.
Amen. Sorry.
Because you'd be in jail.
All right, let's go. Okay. Not you. All right. Thank you. I'll see you guys later. Love you. Bye.
We'll see you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
All right. Excellent. Great questions, Vector. Appreciate it. Let's bring in our next caller. Caller, you're on the air. Make sure you mute that stream. And can we get your name?
Sterling Cannabis.
Sterling Cannabis. So good to hear from you. Friend, how you been?
Good. How you doing, Zach?
Excellent.
Lloyd? I'm excited beyond belief for this interview. Just over 2 weeks ago was the first time I saw you in an interview, and I started contacting everybody I knew, and they were all telling me, oh, this is nothing. This is nothing. It ain't going to go anywhere. Little by little, everybody's been jumping on. But the first time I read through the stuff and saw the interview, this has got legs. And I think it's got room to go somewhere.
You know,
mostly what I want to do.
I was just gonna say, Sterling, I mean, there has been so much interest in this case. So many people have been begging me to talk about it. You know, when I first learned about it a couple of weeks ago, I just mentioned it briefly on air because I was like, you know, how realistic could this possibly be? But then looking into it, it's not like they're making any crazy claims. All they're saying is that
it's rock solid.
It's so basic. It's so basic. How can they not agree with you?
But I do have a question that you guys can help me with. I am technologically inept. I want to send in the letter. I don't have a printer. Is there a way that I can get into the letter online and send the Supreme Court an electronic copy of it?
No, you don't want to do that. Can you hear me? Okay.
Yes.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
Sign it handwritten, and sign another one that's a duplicate of what you wrote. Just copy it with a pen. I think those are the most.
I can go in there, find the one that's out there, and copy it. Yeah.
And then add your input, how it affects you personally, how you feel personally about, you know, the Constitution and the oath of office and honest representation. Add your own, you know, make it a personal thing. I think the Supreme Court files every single letter. So you're actually participating in a historical moment here, and it'll be in the archives. And maybe there will be a building, you know, built where it'll have, you know, all these people who wrote letters. But at least it'll be archived in some way.
That would be wonderful. It might just be a big old paper dump, but you know what? That would be wonderful.
Well, you know, I mean, think about it. How often do people write to the Supreme Court of the United States? I mean, how often do Americans really get involved in the process, I think, is a better question here. I mean, we have a real opportunity to, in a unified voice, show them.
The only person in Washington I ever wrote in my life was Jerry Ford. And that's when he was a representative from Michigan.
Yeah, yeah. What did you write Gerald Ford about?
It's been a long, long time.
What did you write Gerald Ford about, Sterling?
Oh, my godfather was a lobbyist for GM, mm-hmm. and he got invited over to dinner a few times, and so it was really just, you know, thank yous for coming over and talking to me and asking me if I wanted to be MK Ultra, kind of.
Really? Did he just want you?
He asked me if I wanted to be president. Mm-hmm. And at 8 years of age, I said, hell no without the hell.
Always a smart one. All right. Well, Sterling, thank you so much for calling in, buddy. And do me a favor.
One more little thing I want to add for you.
Okay.
Because I appreciate you bringing on this interview so very much, I've got a new coin that I'm going to be pouring within the next week.
Excellent.
And it's kind of it goes a little bit further than the last one. This one is kind of a winning coin.
Okay.
On one side, it has a nice bold USA, and on the back, it has a full spread screaming eagle.
Love it. Absolutely love it. I'll show it off on air when you send it.
I will send you one when I get them done.
All right. Thank you, brother. I appreciate it. Thank you for your call.
Have a blessed day and Merry Christmas.
God bless you. Merry Christmas, brother. We'll talk to you soon. Excellent. Okay. Uncensored Abe is coming in next. Abe is another podcaster and one of the co-hosts on another show that I do on Thursdays. Abe, are you there? Go ahead and unmute. And
Mike, check over.
Yes, we've got you. Yeah. Welcome to the program.
Mr. Brunson, great to meet you. Zach, how are you today?
Excellent.
Thank you. Doing well, thanks. How are you doing?
I'm trying to get a camera to work.
Okay.
There we go.
There we go. Yeah, for a moment.
I forgot I had them all blocked. Okay. Did I hear you say, I think I saw an interview that I heard that, so how did the case come about? I thought I heard that there was, that the court petitioned your group or a team somehow? How did they originally come about?
No, we started it. My brother is the legal mind behind it, and he had been suing banks in state and federal court, and he had a lot of experience doing that because he was upset with some stuff that was – the subprime mortgages were being bundled and sold in the stock market. And
I lost my house from that.
And so he decided he'd bring some actions against some banks, and but he didn't want to hire an attorney. He had a love for the law. He always wanted to be a lawyer, I think, and so he just – had a love for studying the law. So he found a course in rules of civil procedure. And the course was basically know the rules better than the attorneys, follow the rules, beat them at their own game. And when you go into court, go knowing that you're probably going to get dismissed, but you're going to go to you're going to appeal it. And the appellate attorneys and the appellate courts are much more strict when it comes to rules of civil procedure and the law and the rules. So you can prevail if you do it that way. So he really got into it and studied, and he had some success, but sometimes judges, no matter how right you are, they're just going to rule against you. But he had a judgment against a bank, and they got it overturned.
So specific to this case, though, how did this case get into in front of the court?
Okay. Well, actually started with me being the plaintiff in federal court. Okay. And there are three of us that were working on this, three brothers. And as we started having problems with the judges with my case, blocking it, not even letting me file after it had been filed and served to some defendants, they canceled it and blocked it out. So my brother Roland decided, and we felt great about it, that he would file an identical case because we had kind of got the bugs out of mine. Mine's a Fourth Amended complaint, and his was identical to that. So he filed in state court. He filed an action in state court against 388 defendants claiming that there was a security breach and that there should have been a pause in an investigation and there shouldn't have been people taking position as president and vice president until that breach had been, you know, fixed, until there had been an investigation. And so he went in state court and got dismissed. They got it removed. The U.S. attorneys removed it. It's called removed it to federal court. And then he lost there and he appealed it. We knew he would lose. And then he went to the 10th Circuit Court of Appeals and they wouldn't make a decision. And then we found a special rule that if the Supreme Court believes that it's a national emergency, they'll let you bypass the requirement of getting the final lower court's decision, which he did. And the court called him and actually gave him permission to file an emergency petition. And then the lower court made a decision, so he didn't have to do it that way.
The court called him?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah,
do you have any kind of correspondence or anything to point more to that? I'd really be interested in hearing more about that, because I myself I stayed at a Holiday Inn last night, so, but I'm an amateur constitutional lawyer myself. Is this something that I could do?
Well, if the main thing is you need to start in the lower court and you need to lose, and so you can appeal it. But for it to be categorized as a national emergency case,
perfect. In the interest of time, let's keep it moving. In the interest of time, I apologize. I don't want to take up too much of Zach's time. I got two more topics I want to get to. The qualified immunity statute is something that has driven me nuts throughout my entire life. Qualified immunity protects the government official from lawsuits alleging that the official violates rights, only allowing suits where officials violated a clearly established statutory constitutional right. I think I heard you say that the expected remedies is dealing with this of qualified immunity / immunity in general.
Okay, you're breaking up. I can't hear you, but I think I can answer your question. I'm not a lawyer, okay? But I think I can answer your question based on what the U.S. attorneys were doing for the defense. They were claiming absolute immunity. They were claiming that they could do anything they want because they had absolute immunity. And they also claimed that we were in the wrong, that we couldn't pursue this because we didn't have a waiver. We didn't get permission from the sergeant in arms. We basically were suing in the wrong court. Okay, we're supposed to, if you bring a claim against the government or government officials.
But specific to the remedy side of it, is that the goal of like he said, what is the goal of this? Because on the docket case,
what we're asking for in damages, is that what you're saying?
What's the expected remedy? And you mentioned that there was more looking towards the reason why I asked that is because the Quest is presented says a serious conflict exists between decisions rendered from this court and lower appeals court, along with constitutional provisions and statutes in deciding whether a trial court has the jurisdiction, as you mentioned. This case uncovers a serious national security breach that is unique and is of the first impression due to the serious nature of this case. It involves the possible removal of the sitting president of the United States. This is why people are up in arms about this, because they believe that the result of this case is going to be the removal of the president and the vice president of the United States. And so can we address that specifically with as many people as we possibly can right now to either put that to bed or to understand what the damages or the expected remedy is from this?
Well, that is one of the remedies. The Supreme Court, and I think attorneys would agree that they have the power. Now, whether they'll do it or not, that's another question. But they actually have the power to remove the sitting president and vice president. Yes.
Supreme the power to remove a
they absolutely do. And if you think about it, if it were a criminal
separation of powers.
Abe, you're breaking up so bad.
Here's an example. Let's say that a member of Congress committed murder, and he was tried in a state court, and the U.S. attorneys were, defending him, and they couldn't overturn the murder decision. And he ends up at the U.S. Supreme Court, and the U.S. Supreme Court upholds the murder charge and it's capital punishment in that state. And he would, based on a Supreme Court decision, he would be found guilty and capital punishment would take effect. And capital punishment is a form of removing someone from office, right?
Yeah,
so, no, they have. I've talked to several attorneys about this. I have a friend who's a former member of Congress. He's a lawyer. He's worked in the Supreme Court Chief Justice's office. And he said they absolutely have the power to do this.
Can you hear me okay now?
Yeah, well, I can hear you now.
Okay. I tried to turn off as many things as possible. I respectfully completely disagree with you. The Supreme Court does not have the power to remove the President of the United States. It's the 25th Amendment, and the 25th Amendment lays it out very clearly what is the procedures for removing a president or a vice president.
Okay, we're talking about treason. They could be removed and barred from holding public office the rest of their lives. Now,
let me just finish my statement here.
Okay? Go ahead, Lloyd.
Okay. The Supreme Court is the final say. If anything is deemed unconstitutional, who's the one that says whether it is or not? Now, you're raising a constitutional issue, and that would be challenged. And who would be the final decider on that? It would be the Supreme Court, right? We're talking about the Supreme Court. We're not talking about anything else. And so this is a unique case. It's an unusual case. It's never been done before. And they can do whatever the hell they want. The Supreme Court has already decided that babies are not human. How'd they do that? Isn't there a protection in the Constitution, the basic protections of rights in the Constitution? I mean, the Supreme Court can do anything they damn well please, you know? And if you're going to challenge it, they're the final decision, you know? What are you going to do? You're going to take them to court and say they.
I would not want one of these lawfare geniuses, Lawrence Tyne, something like that, in 2020, filing a with the Supreme Court and finding a legal loophole to remove President Trump. The separation of powers is clear, and there is no legal remedy for a case like this to remove a president of the United States. So I'll let you go.
Why don't you go tell the Supreme Court that you won't let him do it? Okay.
No, I don't have to tell them that.
You're talking about the
Supreme Court is an originalist. Hold on a second.
Now you're arguing Constitution. No, I'm not going to listen to this.
Just one second.
Okay. All right.
Just one second. Let me just get a final word in.
I'm not going to waste my time.
Abe, you're every time that you start talking, you start breaking up so bad, and then you don't know when Loy's talking and Loy is trying to talk at the same time.
Let me just get one last word in.
And then we're
going to. I'm going to cut off right now.
No.
The Supreme Court does not have.
Okay. Abe's gone. Okay.
Hey, well, I want to say something about Abe. Yeah. I like him. I think he's a great guy. Okay. But now's not the time and the place to argue a constitutional issue like that. I know how extreme this sounds. Now, they don't have to remove members of office. They don't have to remove a president. They can do something else. I'm just saying they have the power to do it.
Sure.
Because they are the final say. Regarding any constitutional issue. It's really a challenging discussion. It'd be nice to visit with Abe where we're, you know, we have some time to really go back and forth. But yeah, now's not the place for that. So, Abe, I thank you for calling in. I think you're great. Okay,
I'll put you guys in touch after the show, and you can hash anything out. But you're right. I mean,
well, I don't have time for that. I'm going to do this interview, and I've been going quite. I've had a break that I normally don't have, but I don't really have time to get into discussions like that.
I understand. I mean, this is unprecedented. We'll see. We'll see what happens. Right. I mean,
Yeah, they have the power. I've talked to really smart attorneys, and they say the Supreme Court has the power, but they don't think they're going to do it, but they have the power to do it.
Sure.
Look, the president and the Congress could not change the Roe versus Wade vote or decision, right? They screamed and hollered, and they couldn't do anything about it, could they?
No.
Even though the Roe versus Wade was like the end of the world for them. Okay. Supreme Court has the final say. They can do whatever the hell they want.
There we go. Okay. Bringing in our next caller, and I want to say thank you to Catherine. Catherine had asked where the link was for that letter. I shared it in all the chats. And if you are looking for that letter, you can find it in the description of all the videos. Caller, you're on the air. Can we get your name?
Hey, good evening, guys. Rob, this is Robert from Daytona area, Zach.
Hey, Rob. Hey, you're my neighbor, buddy. How you doing?
Well, yeah, I mean, you and I both have a mutual friend who lives next door to you.
Oh, good stuff. Awesome. Well, thank you very much for calling in. What's on your mind?
All right. Three things, and one actually is for you. But to start off with, you were talking about the financial system. There's a great video out there, if you can find it, and it's called The Money Masters. And it talks about the creation of the financial reserve system and breaks it down all the way back from Europe
to the Bank of England.
Yes.
Yeah. Can I? And, don't get into explaining that. Can I make a comment about that?
Sure.
Yeah, go ahead.
Bill Steele's a really good friend of mine.
Good stuff.
Okay, he's the one that produced it. And that was what got me going on the Federal Reserve. That is an incredible documentary. Everyone should watch it.
Yeah.
So that's The Money Masters. And I think there are 22 parts of it, you know, on the internet, on YouTube. And it was the most watched film on YouTube at one time. So it's amazing. Everyone should watch that. Say, go on.
Agreed.
Talking to Bill. As a matter of fact, I was just talking to Bill Steele a couple of days ago.
That's great. That's great. I've always wanted to interview Bill, but go ahead, Robert.
Second, I don't know if you guys have paid attention to the recent release of the JFK information the past couple of days. Tucker Carlson and Glenn Beck have both commented on it. And, you know, with the way it sounds, the intelligence agencies have been, you know, for the most part, seems like they've been colluding outside the country for making changes in this country. If there's any validity to that, which from the way they describe it, there is, and how they went after Trump, who's to say that this isn't the same kind of scenario that they're going to try and influence the court systems, the Supreme Court, or even the members of Congress and the Senate, you know, for doing exactly what they've been doing, even, God, I guess you could say even during the George Bush era type situations, you know?
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, there are a lot of scenarios. You know, have you ever watched the John Barber? John Barber probably has more interview tape with Jim Garrison than any person on the planet.
John's been on the show before too. Yeah.
Has John been on the show?
He's a good guy.
His first documentary. What was his first documentary? It was around the time that the JFK with Kevin Costner was produced.
Yes.
I lived in Burbank, California at the time, and I'm the one that connected John Barber with the Blue Ridge Film.
Oh, wow.
That produced it.
I think it was called the Garrison Tapes.
I saw a bunch of stuff, and John and I used to hang out quite a bit. And so, interesting stuff, but it doesn't have anything to do with what I'm doing. I think I'm going to have to go pretty quick because I've really gone quite a while. This has been great. I really enjoyed it, but I don't want to get off onto other stuff, and I have a lot to do.
Okay. All right. Well,
the reason why.
Let's go ahead and finish up your question, Robert, because if Lloyd's got to go, I don't want to keep him.
I'll say one more thing. John and I met with the chairman of the board of a major oil company, and we talked about Johnson. It was a very interesting discussion. So So that's a fascinating topic. Yeah, let's go on to something else that relates to what I'm doing. Yeah.
Okay.
The reason why I say it is because Bill Cooper, who wrote, you know, Behold the Pale Horse, had talked about a lot of these institutions being compromised, even up to including the Supreme Court. I'm like, you know, a part of it is, you know, how do we combat that influence from outside intelligence agencies or even from other countries? And finally, for Zach, and I'll let you go. The reason why I brought this up is because I talked to, you know, our friend, and I said, I wonder if you'd be interested in maybe doing a dialect, because I have done like I guess you could say since I was roughly 12, 13 years old, just historical research and how a lot of these things, not so much dot connecting, but just seeing how the history has influenced a lot of where we are and things like, you know, the manipulation through the era of George Bush and, mm-hmm. and just things I would kind of shed a lot of light and things that he and I talked about before you had moved down here yep. that some of your guests have talked about, but goes even deeper than what they know.
Yeah. Have him put us in touch. I'd be happy to get together.
He's got my number. So, I mean, if okay. you get a chance, you know, meet up with him or I'll remind him when I see him Monday. So
okay.
appreciate it. You guys have a good evening and I enjoy your show, man.
Thank you. Really appreciate it. Have a great night. All right. Appreciate it. Okay. And so you said as long as it's on topic, you can stick around or you have to leave.
I'll stick around a little while longer okay. until I feel like I better get, because I'm having fun. It's a Saturday night. What else would I be doing, right?
Okay. All right. I appreciate it. All right. Caller, you're on the air. Make sure you mute that stream.
Monday.
So caller, can you hear me?
Hello,
you're on the air. Yep. Can we get your name?
Yeah, my name is Larry.
Larry, welcome to the program. What's your question for Loy?
Yeah, hey man, I just wanted to say you're a fellow Michigander.
Yep.
And kind of hard to hear you from my end here. But
well, you're coming in loud and clear.
My one question for Loy. Hey, man, how many letters have you guys gotten?
That's a good question. I think it just started up about 4 days ago. I think the first batch was around 200. And now I think as of yesterday, the total had been 4,500. I think after today, it's going to be closer to 8,000. So it's really growing fast.
Okay, good, good. So you're starting to get some kind of headway on that.
So people are really getting involved. Right, they want to be a part of history. Yeah, thank you.
Nice. So my next question on a 1 to 10 confidence level, the Supreme Court, you know, through the things, you know, that you've done and you've been communicating with them and having the clerk and / attorney contact you guys, what do you think, man, as far as them actual scene or, you know, doing their job, which they should be doing?
Well, I think they're threatened and this would protect them. And I think they are serious about their oath of, you know, some of them are, at least the six. Mm-hmm. And three of them have voted in favor of Trump-related lawsuits, which would be much more extreme than this. I mean, this is just about the oath of office and the Constitution. What is there to debate about it, right? Mm-hmm. And any of the justices that would vote against it are basically saying that they don't believe the Constitution is worth anything, yep. that they can announce support and defend. So in a way, they would be committing an act against their own oath. So I'm very optimistic. And I think there's a lot of divine intervention. There are a lot of miracles that happen. People don't recognize, and sometimes they do. And I think we're going to see a miracle. That's what I think. So we're just a few days away. This isn't a long way. January 6th is conference. And if it goes to conference and comes out and moves forward, or if it's already adjudicated by then, I mean, it's kind of an exciting waiting game with not a lot of waiting. So we have a lot to see what happens in the next couple of weeks.
It really is stunning when you think about how long some of these cases sit, like, you know, waiting for the court to take them up. You know, people know nothing for months and months and months. And you guys, I mean, it's been fast tracked. It's shocking to see how quickly this is moving along. 2023 might be a really good year. All right. Anything else for Loy?
I know. And it's phenomenal. And, you know, I'm sorry, I got one more question there, Zach.
Okay.
So now, what do you think the significance is of the January 6th that they put that date out?
I don't think it's a joke. Yeah, I don't think it's a joke. And I don't think it's an in-your-face kind of a statement. I think it's for us, the people. It's, I think they're serious.
You think that's kind
I think
of a threat
concerned.
To the Senate?
And I think it's a message to us to have faith. That's what I think it is.
Yeah, I tend to agree.
Do you think it's kind of a threat to the Senate and the House for packing the courts?
Pardon?
You know, because they're talking about packing the courts.
Exactly. That's one of the elements of this. I mean, this is like the last opportunity, the last stand where the Supreme Court has the most power they've ever had. And right now where they need the most power, and they should have the most power, because how do they get that ability to exercise their power, but from the people. And that's mm-hmm. what we represent. We're part of we, the people, that can go directly to the Supreme Court and bypass the 10th Circuit with an emergency petition that they accept. So it's just an amazing kind of a story about the Constitution and its powers. When you've got the executive branch and the legislative branch working against us, we can actually go to the third, the judicial, and they can do it. They can actually do it. So it's an amazing, this is going to be an amazing historical constitutional kind of a thing. The previous caller thinks that they can't do it. Well, they can. And if they do it, that'll create some whole new legal doctrine and something for the history books.
Absolutely.
Well, Loy, I want to tell you something, man. Thank you so much, and God bless you and your family, and you too, Zach, and everybody putting the good word out there. You guys are phenomenal. I've tried to get into your show a few times to chit-chat. You know, I haven't been able to. But, you know, this is a historical moment. I'm not going to say, I mean, with my confidence level on a 1 to 10, considering, you know, things that have happened, the bullshit with not seeing court cases in the past and all that, I'm at it like a 5. I'm just hoping that, you know, they pull off the 10 and out with the old and in with the new, baby.
Right on. Amen. Right on. Amen. All right. God bless you so much. I'm glad you were able to get in here.
Up in Meesick, Michigan, you old Michigander. And I'm actually looking to migrate south, too. Have a good one, brother.
Thank you, brother.
For taking my call.
Absolutely. We'll talk to you soon.
All right.
Okay. We've got one more caller on the line, Liana Wilbur. And while we're waiting for Liana to come in, Casey Collins says, Lord, I pray a hedge of protection over Loy Brunson, his brothers, and all of their loved ones. The Lord himself goes before you and will be with you. He will never leave you. Do not be afraid. Amen. Thank you so much, Casey. And Liana, welcome to the program.
Thank you, darling. I'm trying to fix it back. Kind of went away on me. Oh, well, it doesn't matter. So Larry just stole a little bit of my thunder there with his question. I was going to come on and say that even if California and other states had this plagiarism thing where they could get out of their oath or whatever, wouldn't that be unconstitutional and therefore repugnant and would have no standing?
Absolutely. And this could be retroactive because they've been protected by an unconstitutional law. So their immunity would be stripped retroactively. So this could open a floodgate of civil suits instead of attorneys and law firms directing you to a claims court, diverting from the court that can take you to the Supreme Court. It would open up opportunities that have never been opened up before. So it's really a demonstration of the First Amendment protecting our right to petition the government for redress of grievances. It says no law shall be made that prohibits our free exercise to do that. So this could be a huge game changer right down to the local level. There are a lot of people, a lot of resources that want to do something and they don't know how to do it. And this would open up opportunities for them through the courts to hold a lot of people accountable, and they need to be held accountable.
Oh, they definitely need to be held accountable, and I hope the court does it, since the military and whatnot still not standing up. But I've got some questions or some issues about it, because at first, when you were first coming out and interviewing about this, and you said that they did take it, and that the lawyer for them did not file anything, a petition to it, so it would go immediately to the 9 justices, correct? And they'll go behind closed doors and they'll just rule on it without any other converse about it, correct?
Well, they could do that because it's an emergency, but the standard procedure, you know, would be the 9 justices vote, and if 4 of them vote for it to move forward into a hearing, then that's what happens. But under Rule 11, we've been researching that. The last time a Supreme Court Rule 11 was filed was during the Nixon administration. So there's not a whole lot of experience since that. So I don't think there are any attorneys that could actually speak from experience with a Rule 11, except maybe the law firm that represented the government in the Rule 11, a case having to do with the Nixon administration. So if they feel something is of a national emergency, it's like, what are they going to do? Give up the whole country because it's constitutionally unsound to protect our country? I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. And they might be at the point now where they, pardon?
I said, yeah, but nothing else really makes sense right now with how everything's gone. I mean, look at how
that's right.
But we didn't have standing. But
right, but the justices are being challenged and threatened. And that's something to consider.
But if justice is truly blind, they won't consider that. They'll go behind those closed doors. They will pull out their constitution, and that's what they will go by. They will take all their personal stuff out of it. They will take all the extra minutia out of it. If they are true justices that are blind to the actual circumstances, you know, and focus on the law. And I don't want to take out the hopium there.
Hang on a second. You're saying they're going to do this. What qualifies you to say that? Fraud vitiates everything. National threat vitiates everything.
Yes, fraud does vitiate everything. I'm not saying Supreme Court justice,
stop it. I'm going to cut it off again. You're someone that wants the. You don't know what you're talking about, okay? You don't know what you're talking about. You don't know what they're going to do.
Are you a licensed lawyer licensed to argue in front of the justices?
No, but you're making statements you can't make. You know, you have an opinion. No, I don't want to. You know, it seemed like a brilliant.
Okay, I think you just don't like to be challenged because I put out your information. I gave out your letter last Friday. I've been trying to get people pumped up about this.
What are you trying to challenge? Tell me, what are you trying to challenge? I don't know what you're trying to challenge. What point are you trying to make?
No, you seem to think that I'm trying to challenge you when I'm not. These are honest.
No.
And
no,
the you're law saying the justice is the law. That is the way it is supposed to be. You're not supposed
who's going to enforce it? Okay. Who's going to enforce the law?
Zach,
who's going to enforce the justice?
Okay.
So you're going to go. What are you going to tell the justices what the law is? You tell them what they're going to do. Okay. They've already ruled that babies are not human beings. Okay. How about that one? Did they follow the law there like you're talking about? Look, I don't mean to be insulting to you. I really don't. I respect you coming on the show, but I don't think it's appropriate to just say this is what they're going to do. I don't know what they're going to do, and I'm not
saying what they're going to do. But I know as a judge or a lawyer, you are not supposed to think about personal consequences. You're only supposed to focus on the law, and that's my point. Now, Zach.
Okay. Yes.
Okay. Let me address that. Before you go on, hold it. Let me address that question.
Oh my God.
You only have to think about the law. Well, that's what Mike Lee said, and that's what 380 other. Says we're going to follow the law. But let me tell you something, fraud and questions of fraud vitiate the law. And you have to take a pause before you go head first into the law. If your interpretation of the law is going to destroy the country, right? It's a whole different situation than what you're explaining. They can't just go in there and go letter of the law. You know, this is what we got to do. And even if the country falls, we got to follow the law. No, it's not like that. This is not a civil case between two people that are fighting over their boundaries of their yard.
No, this is about our whole damn country and whether the people
are going to stand up and take care of it or whether the actual government
is going to fix itself or not. That's what this is about. This is about every single branch of our government being corrupt as hell, including saying illegal aliens
who got their free trip
to Martha's Vineyard have more standing than damn patriots.
You're getting way off track.
Liana, you guys agree. You guys are actually on the same page, and it's just the manner in which it's coming out.
I think let me say something. I think she's suggesting that the court's corrupt and that they're not going to make the right decision. Okay.
That's not what I suggested at all, sir. You're not listening. Maybe it's your iPhone connection. Zach,
I'm out. Have a good night.
Goodbye.
Go talk over someone else.
Okay.
Look, so I'm the guest here. She's the questioner. She wants to turn in to be the guest. She wants to be the know-it-all and take over the interview. Hey, sweetheart. I'm the one that's being interviewed here, not you. Okay, why don't you come on the show, and then I'll call in. Why don't we do that?
All right. Okay. We have one more caller, guys. If everybody can please just remain civil. If you have a question for Lloyd, then we'll go ahead and get that in. I need to say thank you to Ildi the Hun, who said AT&T took my unlimited internet, and now I'm not able to attend the live shows anymore. Even if I did, my data would eat just one show and then leave me with no internet for the rest of the month. I miss you all. Thank you, RPGF. And then Wyatt for Jesus says, please pray for this case. It has God's hand all over it. Miracles from the beginning. And, you know, although I understood what Liana was saying, I mean, I think that you're right, Lloyd. We are in uncharted territory, and we've gone through a number of different experiences where, despite what the law said or what the evidence stated, you know, people have proven that maybe that really doesn't have any bearing on what is actually going to take place. But in this instance, you know, based upon what you've presented, I mean, you know, there is a logical conclusion that should be reached. And the question is, are they going to or not?
Well, and there's no precedence for this because this is unique. Like I said, it was back in the 70s that a Rule 11 case, and this is a Rule 11 case. So there's no one alive, and there's definitely no one coming on this show with a question that is qualified to give any kind of characterization of this type of a case.
Sure.
Because it hasn't existed. It's a whole new so to just talk about it, you know, a bunch of stuff relating to other cases that are more common, it's not applicable.
Sure, I understand.
This is really bizarre. I mean, think about that. They accepted this as a national emergency case. Why did they do that? They, you know, according to her, they would have just tossed it, not even let it get docketed. It's like, no, go get a 10th Circuit Court decision before you come here, right? When they've done that.
It's significant.
That's what we're supposed to do.
Certainly significant. So, all right, caller, you're on the air and you're the last caller of the night. What's your name?
Hi, my name's Linda.
Hi, Linda.
I love you both. Thank you so much. And
thank you.
I had to call in and I'm just thanking the Lord for this. I'm very excited. I'm as excited as lawyers, and I think miracles are happening. So I went, Lord, I'm so excited. I'm just going to open. I'm going to read my Bible anyway. And I go, I'm going to open it up to my trust bookmark. And I opened up and it's John 15. And it says, this is the NIV version. It says, the vine and the branches. He says, I am the true vine and my Father is the gardener. He cuts off every branch in me that bears no fruit, while every branch that does not bear fruit, he prunes so that it will be even more fruitful. You are already clean because of the word I have spoken to you. Remain in me and I will remain in you. No branch can bear fruit by itself. It must remain in the vine. Neither can you bear fruit unless you remain in me. I am the vine. You are the branches. It's man remains in me and I in him. It's all about the branches. And I think our branches of government can be cleaned up. And I'm just so grateful. And I opened up to that.
Amen.
Paragraph. That's
beautiful.
I love you both.
And, I love you too. That's totally applicable.
John. Yeah, the branches, and they got to clean. We got to stay in Him, and He's in charge, and is the Lord. And this is a miracle. I mean, our country could be saved, and I truly believe that. And Lord, whatever happens, thank you so much. And I'll leave.
All right, thank you so much for your call. I appreciate that. It's a great way to end the show.
Yeah.
All right. God bless.
Thanks so much.
We'll talk to you soon. Bye bye. All right. Before we end, let me just say the final thank yous here. I need to say thank you to Eve for America. She said, my show last night with Dr. Longo was amazing. Thank you. Merry Christmas. Much love. And then Kelly said, really appreciate you, Zach. In my darkest hour, listening to you has given me hope. Proud friend of Bill's. God bless you, Kelly. Thank you very much, Kelly. And then just want to make sure there's nothing else over here. Nakaz said, I missed most of the live streams today, so I'm going to go back and watch double time. Hope that you enjoy it. There's a couple of contentious calls at the end. Thank you to Sean Joe. Thank you to Casey. And McDewey says, great guest. I wish Abe had come in better. He had good points. Okay. Loy, go ahead, sir. Yeah, it's a little quiet. So did you get another call? Let me mute you and unmute you again. Let me see if that works. Okay. And actually, it's asking me to ask you to unmute.
There. Did that work?
No, not quite. Not quite. Hang on. It sounds like somebody's calling you again.
Yeah, I better go.
Okay. Well, I just want to say thank you very much for being here, and we'll stay in touch, and I'll get a book, and hopefully I'll talk to you soon. Okay. Thank you very much. All right. Have a great night, Lloyd. Appreciate it. All right. And gosh, I know that everybody's hearts were in the right place, and unfortunately, that just happens sometimes. Personalities conflict, and people get their points crossed and mixed up. Thank you to Liana. Thank you to Abe. Thank you to every single person who called in tonight. I really do appreciate it, guys. Let me go ahead and dump these gold pills over here on the foxhole. And I want to appreciate all of you for being here. Thank you very much. If you're still over there on Rumble, we got 3,000 people watching, 774 Rumbles. Just hit that plus sign. It's free. It doesn't do anything. It doesn't cost anything. All it does is let other people know that this is a show worth seeing. I think this is a show worth seeing. Despite the personality conflicts that we have, this is good information. Whether or not this case gives us the outcome that we're hoping for, a complete changeover in the government or holding certain people accountable, I think that it has the potential to open minds and to get people involved. I want to hear from every single one of you guys. 3,000 people on Rumble. I don't know how many people over on Foxhole, probably 1,000 people over there on Getter. Send that letter to the Supreme Court. Send that letter to the Brunson brothers. Send the letter to me so that I know that you guys are following through. Thank you very, very much. Casey Collins, one more thank you. God bless you, Zach. You're such a good man. Thank you to everyone for being here with us tonight. Good luck and God bless. I'll see you Monday.